This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
It was super necessary.
God, Eric, my God!
Unbelievable!
Hello and welcome back to Super Necessary. Today I'm delighted to say that we're joined by the voice of Cage Warriors, the play-by-play announcer, Mr. Brad Wharton. How you doing, Brad? You okay?
Yeah, good, good. Thanks for having us on, guys.
No problem. Pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much for joining us. So I'm just going to jump straight into it. I've got a lot of questions for you, so it's going to be a good one. So first of all, can you just let people know what was your introduction to the MMA world?
I've always enjoyed fighting, like, you know, since being a very young kid. I used to watch, you know, Frank Bruno, people like that. Got into sumo wrestling when it used to be on Channel 4, like in the late 80s, early 90s. And then, you know, like many people, like, you know, young lads used to watch a lot of pro wrestling. And Ken Shamrock turned up in 1996 and they showed a couple of clips from the UFC. And I was like, oh, well, that was kind of cool. Not long after that, I moved to Holland, which is a huge kickboxing country. So, you know, you can't move in Holland for like, you'd go to a video shop and there'd be whole sections of kickboxing and this other stuff called free fight, which was like early MMA. It was almost like Japanese rings rules style MMA that a lot of the Dutch karate guys and kickboxers did. And there was a UFC 3 video there as well. So saw Ken Shamrock on the front, picked it up, took it home. And that was it. And now I shout at violence for a living. So here we are.
Did you ever... When you were into Zumo, did you ever try to get yourself into one of these sacks that they put on? I can imagine Brad Wharton in one of those Zumo sacks. I don't know what they're called.
Do you know what? I've not, but I really want to. I think if I ever get married, that's what the stag do is going to be. It's going to be those big inflatable Zumo suits. That's a great idea. Thank you.
No problem. You're welcome.
I don't even need an inflatable one.
So next question, and can you remember your first time doing commentary? Like, for you, was the any nerves knowing fans would be listening?
My first ever time I commentated, there was no nerves because I was really, really hungover and it was all that I could think about at the time. I basically gone to a friend's show. It was his first ever show. And he rang me like 3 days before and said, oh, I've got no commentators. Do you want to do it? Like, just for a laugh. Like, I'll pay you in beer sort of thing. And so I was like, yeah, sure, fine. Went out the night before, got absolutely smashed. Had to drive from Cambridge to Manchester the next day. Just absolutely hanging. It was an absolute shambles. The guy who recorded it ran off with the footage. So thankfully, it's never seen the light of day. But all I could sort of think about afterwards was whatever I do next is not going to be that bad. So I think it kind of gave me a boost in a way. But no, there's always nerves. Like, I think anyone who does something like this and says they're not nervous beforehand, they're not taking it seriously. I found it a lot easier to just jump on at a regional show and, you know, just talk shit over 25 amateur fights than, you know, I do now, even though I've been with Cage Warriors for nearly 10 years. But you know, the nerves still go, especially when you know, you're about to go live and the counter's ticking down. And even with the you would think, like, in the lockdown period when the arenas have been empty, it'd be a bit easier because you know, you've not got 3,000 people staring at you. It was terrifying. because the room's just silent and everyone's staring at you. So I was quaking in my boot.
Yeah, I would have thought having the empty arenas would have probably
it's good, made you know, it. Like, once you get into it, the nerves become like a bit of adrenaline.
Yeah, I was just saying, I think the empty arenas would probably make it worse because every little thing you do is picked up on because there's no one else there. So I think with the crowd there, if you make a little bit of a mistake, no one's really going to pick up on it. But if it's empty, everyone notices.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, there's nowhere to hide when, you know, there's only like 20 people in the entire room. It's like you're just sitting in a big empty cave and everyone's staring at you. It's pretty weird. But, you know, hopefully things cross those days behind us now.
So, obviously, you remember your first events. Do you actually remember, obviously, being hungover and stuff? Do you remember any of the calls that you made? Like, might you be like, oh, that, I can't do this.
I honestly, like, I can barely even remember, like, some of the guys who fought. Like, I know a few guys who fought on that first card because they fought on, like, the subsequent FCC cards, and I'm still involved with FCC today. But with the footage being stolen, I've never been able to look back at it. So I think, you know, maybe whoever that guy is who stole the footage, I need to buy him a drink probably because he's probably done me a massive favour. Like,
wouldn't you like to see that footage just to see what it's like?
I think I probably would now, yeah. Like, you know, I think a lot of people who do commentary, like, they hate listening to themselves back. And I'm the same. Like, I do watch him back sort of on the Monday or Tuesday just to... Yeah, just to see how it was. But, you know, you find yourself, like, properly cringing. I think, like, everyone's their own worst critic as well. So I'm sat there thinking, oh, shit, that was bad, where someone else probably wouldn't notice a lot of it. But, you know, it's good to go back to that early stuff, you know. Like, for example, we've got Don Wooding now as the Cage Warriors Bantamweight champion. He fought on FCC as an amateur, like, 6-7 years ago against Conor Hignett, which is a great fight. Went and watched it back, and I was like, man, that was terrible. Like, you could tell I'd had about 6 pints, and it's just like, no, I can't do that anymore.
So,
or, like, could be a bit professional these days.
Only a little bit. So we've also had in the past, we've had Michael Chiavello and Mitch Chilson on, obviously the commentators for ONE Championship. And we sort of got their opinion on this. For you, what does it take to be a great commentator? What do you need to be doing to be successful in that world?
I think the first thing is you have to really, really love it. Because there's, you know, there's precious few opportunities available. And, you know, there's not a lot of people out there willing to give you a helping hand because there's so few opportunities available, you know. So you've got to really love it, and you've got to understand that, you know, you're going to have to do a lot of hard work, a lot of travel, put a lot into it for very little reward. So I think first and foremost, it's got to be a passion project. And I think, you know, if you don't really love it, that's going to be really apparent with the work you do. You know, you at the end of the day, your job is to, you know, tell the stories of the people in the cage, sell it to people, entertain people, inform people. If you don't care about it, why would anyone watching care about it? So that's super important. You know, and I think you've got to, as well as kind of having the knowledge and the work ethic and everything as well, you've got to be able to articulate it. You know, you've got to be confident with speaking, and you've got to be able to think fast. But yeah, I think more than anything else, like, if you genuinely love it, you can learn the other stuff.
Yeah. One question that I didn't ask last time, but I think would be a valid one. Obviously, with the commentators in UFC, some of them have been called off for being biased. How do you keep, like, bias aside? You know what I mean? When you call a fight, you might have a fighter from where you're from who's fighting, and how do you keep that bias aside and call it as, you know, the MMA fight that it is?
It's tough, you know. I've commentated fights, you know, that I've had very good friends in, guys that, you know, I've not trained for a long time, but back when I did, you know, guys that I used to train with. And it's rough, you know, like, especially if, you know, your experience. I think at the end of the day, you know, you've got to be professional about it. You know, it is a job. You've got to treat it as a job. And there's plenty of time afterwards to go and find that person and be like, you know, what were you doing? Or are you okay? And, you know, it all comes down to that, you know, that thing like, you know, do you love it enough to give it the respect that it deserves? You know, I love this sport. I'm not going to go and make a mockery of it by being biased towards someone or getting upset when my mate loses or my teammate loses or something like that. You know, it's that old saying, isn't it, from the Cypress Hill song? It's a fun job, but it's still a job.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it, mate. the next one, then, we know you've done quite a lot of articles for various MMA websites. Can you just talk about your love for writing in general? When did that start?
I've always enjoyed writing from being really, really young. I always loved English at school. When I was a little kid, I used to read a lot, and I used to write like my own stories from being like, you know, sort of 7-8 years old. Just I wrote a whole book once about a chicken with a motorbike. It was brilliant. you know, and J.K. Rowling's making billions off Harry Potter, and I'm sat here, you know, without my chicken motorbike money. It's a disgrace. But yeah, I always loved it. You know, I always kind of liked that sort of like creative outlet. So it's something I kind of, you know, I did through school. I enjoyed writing like essays in English and history and stuff. And then I suppose like I used to write a lot on the forums, like back in the day before Facebook and Twitter, with things like all the MMA lot. I used to hang out on Sherdog and the Underground and stuff. And, you know, I used to do a lot of posting there and, you know, do a lot of like quite lengthy posts and threads and stuff. And then someone approached me from a website, the forum I used to post on, and said, oh, do you fancy doing like a blog or whatever? So it kind of started from there and just did it more and more and more, and then ended up a few years later working for the Daily Mirror covering MMA for them. So it's something I really enjoy. I like telling stories. I like telling other people's stories. So yeah, it's, you know, it's just fun. And like, you know, I think with anything in life, if you can, you know, take something that you enjoy to a stage where you can make a living from it, then fair play to you.
Yeah. Do you think you benefited at all when you say you were writing for the Daily Mirror covering their MMA? I suppose at the time there probably wasn't that many people actually covering MMA, especially in newspapers. I mean, you used to get like a little tiny square in the sports section towards the end of it, and that was it, covering MMA. And that was only if it was like a British fighter fighting in the UFC, and that was it. So do you think there was a benefit in that at all for you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, sort of, I think I was writing for the Mirror like 2011, 2012. And, you know, a lot of the guys that I sort of came up with, like guys who I sort of started when I started writing, we all started off as like bloggers and, you know, pretend journalists and that, you know. And, you know, I look around today and I see guys like Ben Cartledge, Jeff Levy, Judge Ricky Wright, and International MC. Like, we all started together as like bloggers and pretend journalists and stuff. And there just weren't people doing it. So I guess we kind of got a lot of those opportunities by virtue of the fact that, you know, when the Mirror started saying like, oh, we're going to expand our pro wrestling blog to include MMA, who's writing about MMA? Well, there's only like 10 of us doing it. So we kind of got stuff by default, really. But, you know, just ride until the wheel falls, don't you?
That's it. So just stepping away from MMA for a moment, are we right in saying that you like to DJ as well?
I do, yeah. I'm really bad, though. I am the absolute epitome of all the gear, no idea. That's me.
So what's your DJ name then? Have you got one?
DJ Rubbish. Honestly, I'm not even kidding. I want to be honest, like I am a bedroom DJ. You know, it's just me and not in the missus, basically. I am gonna try and record stuff one day, but I love music. Like I spend so much time listening to music, and growing up in Europe, obviously dance music was massive, house and trance and stuff. So I've always kind of big into that, and I do like a lot of electronic music. And a few years ago I thought, you know what, why not? I'm just going to get a little, you know, you can get a DJ controller for like 200-300 quid now. So I got a really basic entry level one, and then did what I always do, which is get into something for a couple of weeks, and then ended up spending like 800 quid on like a professional fucking setup. didn't know what any of it did, got rid of it after a year, but I think about a year or two ago I got myself another set, And I'm just trying to practice, really. Like, it's good fun. Like I say, I'd be sat listening to the music anyway, so you know, I might as well have a go at actually spinning some myself.
Do you think in the future you might catch up to what's his name, DJ Mikey B, is it? Michael Brisbane.
Man, I've seen him on the vinyl, man. He's good. He's really good.
Yeah.
what I've decided, like, my ultimate goal is to force Cage Warriors to let me do, like, because, like, when we do the shows in London, we've got a really good DJ there, and it's because everyone's, like, in the pit. It's a really good, like, party atmosphere. And they let Paddy G DJ once between the prelims and the main card. So that's my, like, end goal for DJ Rubbish, is to do a 15-minute set between Cage Warriors fights.
Nice. Look forward to it.
In his suit and tie and everything.
we're here for it. Trust me. We're looking forward to it.
You like the next Daft Punk?
Daft is probably the right word, yeah.
So just to make you aware that there's a bit of delay in the video, so sometimes you might like speak and you're still speaking, it's just there's a bit of delay, so we apologize for that. But moving on to the next question, so obviously you've been play-by-play commentator for Cage Warriors for years. Can you just talk a bit about their growth and for you, why you believe Cage Warriors isn't watched by as many as it should be?
Well, you know, Cage Warriors has always been part of UK MMA. You know, the first show was, what, 2002? Mm. You know, which was really when the first sort of proper MMA shows in the UK was starting. Obviously, it's been through many different hands over the years, and different companies have owned it, different people have run it. But it's always been there. It's always been a constant, and it's always been kind of, you know, what I see as like the best of UK and European MMA. You know, you look at the guys like Dan Hardy, who was a multiple-time Cage Warriors champion, had some of his toughest and best fights on Cage Warriors. Obviously, the current regime has been in now for nearly 12 years. I think Graham Boylan took over in 2010. And I don't think anyone can deny what Cage Warriors has done since that time. Mm. You know, obviously, we always bang on about how many people we've sent to the UFC, but it's a fact, right? You can't argue with it. I think anyone really, any you know, young fighter who's a highly regarded prospect, you know, if you're still in that development phase and you want to take that next step from fighting on the regional scene to get into the UFC, there's no better place to do it than Cage Warriors. And there's a proven track record there. And I think, you know, more than anything else, the team at Cage Warriors, guys like Ian Dean, guys like Graham, they really do care about the athletes. Like, you know, they're not there trying to exploit people, trying to make a quick buck on the back of people. They're giving people the right fights to bring them on at the right speed and to get them in that place where they can compete when they get to the UFC. You know, we've seen guys go from the regional circuit straight to the UFC and they've just not been ready. And it's very, very rare that people get a second chance. I mean, you know, you look at someone like Nicholas Dalby, who got a second shot at the UFC. That's rare. It doesn't happen very often. And I would say to anyone, you know, if you can afford it, if you've got the sort of backing from your family and financially, to just be able to take a couple of years and stay on the regional circuit and go through an organization like Cage Warriors, or, you know, go through an organization like LFA or someone, if you're in the US or wherever you are, take that development time, you know, just because guys are getting into the UFC at 22 years old and a 6-0 record doesn't mean that works for everyone. Might work for some, but you need those tough fights. And that's what you're going to get on Cage Warriors. You're going to get the right fight at the right time.
How important was it for Cage Warriors, do you think, for them to establish the Cage Warriors Academy? Obviously, when they took over that, I think it was Shinobi Fighting Championships before that, was it? Do you think that was crucial to its growth?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, back then there was a lot of different plans for the Cage Warriors Academy. So you had Shinobi in the Northwest. Southeast, you had BC MMA, Pain Pit MMA in Wales, which is now the Wales Academy, run by Richard Shaw. Originally, the plan was for them to be everywhere. There was going to be like one in London, one in Manchester, and then, you know, Ireland, Scotland. There was one in Scandinavia. And I think the plan was to sort of have academy shows and then the main Cage Warriors show on afterwards. But obviously, that, you know, that ended up not happening. But the academy shows have kind of stuck around. And look, you know, this is what we're talking about. You know, with all the goodwill in the world, Cage Warriors can't have 15 amateur fights in every show. Like, logistically, it just doesn't work. You know, we have a lot to do on the production side of things that needs to be done during the day before we can let people in. So, you know, we used to have a couple of amateur fights on, but, you know, it's a real time drain. So having those academy setups has been fantastic over the years. And, you know, Shinobi was an excellent show before it became the academy. You know, Paul Reed always put on incredible shows. Same for BC MMA, you know, high level amateur stuff. And, you know, you're seeing guys who've come through that academy network having success in Cage Warriors now. You know, Ian Garry won the amateur tournament. You know, there are guys coming through from the Southeast. There are, you know, the likes of Liam Gittins, et cetera, who compete on the academy in the Northwest. And, you know, it's no mistake that these guys are all really competitive. IMAF as well is doing, you know, a similar kind of thing. You look at guys like Christian Leroy Duncan. He's got like a 16-9 amateur record. He's in his first 5 pro fights. He doesn't need 30 fights in. So, you know, again, like, it's great that those academy shows are there now. So people have got the option of, you know, I don't have to turn pro right away. I can have a really good fight against a really good guy at amateur in a good professional setting. And then it doesn't really matter if I win or lose because I've got the experience. You know, you turn pro, everyone forgets about the amateur record anyway.
Yeah, that's it. So with yourself calling so many fights over the years, what are your favourite moments, both from FFC and Cage Warriors? FCC rather.
I suppose my favorite amateur fight from FCC was Ashley Reese versus Martin Chester. Ashley's with Bellator now, doing really well for himself. That was, I think at the time I called it probably the best amateur fight I've ever seen, and I'd recommend anyone to go back and have a look at it. It's definitely the kind of fight that they should have been getting paid a lot of money for. It's kind of sad that they did it as amateurs. And you know, and I'm sure they both sold a fair few tickets. So I know they made a nice few quid, but man, it's the kind of fight that, you know, you look at it and you're like, man, that's taken a couple of years off the end of the career, you know. But, you know, that really made me realise the importance of, like, great amateur networks and stuff. And, you know, the two guys coming from really good teams and, you know, just having an absolute barnstormer. So that always holds like, a really fond memory for me. With Cage Warriors, I've got a couple. I mean, I suppose the really easy one to say is Nathaniel Wood versus Josh Reed, which was just absolute chaos.
Yeah.
You know, probably one of the maddest, like, short fights I've ever called. I felt like I'd ran an absolute marathon after doing that. I don't think I breathed for about 3 minutes. So that was awesome. Joe McColgan versus Mehdi Benlakdar at the BBC, not the BBC studios, sorry, the BT studios. Just a really unique venue. You know, there was only like 100 people in the crowd, I think. But it just looks sick as fuck. Like, you know, the atmosphere was incredible in there. And those two just left it all in the cage. So that was awesome. Nicholas Dalby winning his first title with that question mark in his second world title against Alex Lahore, also in Copenhagen. They were both big moments for me. Nick's a good friend. So seeing him succeed is, you know, again, that's one of the times where you struggle to be professional because really wanted the guy to do well, but you know, you're gonna keep it on the down low until the show goes off the air. So that was really cool. Yeah, man, there's been so many, and like, you know, this is the thing. Like, you know, I do get offers to commentate for other shows, but you know, my heart's always going to be with Cage Warriors. People often say to me, like, oh, you know, you're looking forward to, like, you know, getting to the UFC in the end. And it's like, I'm not really. Like, obviously, you know, if the phone goes now and it's Uncle Dana, I'm going to have to think about it. But, I'm not sat here thinking to myself, how do we get to the UFC? Like, the thing with the UFC is once you work for them, you can't work for anyone else.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got good commentators already. They'll always have good commentators in the UFC. But I think, you know, I can add something to the domestic scene in the UK. And I love Cage Warriors, and I've got no intention of going anywhere else.
Glad to hear it.
Well, I think you've kind of just answered our next one with that. So we were going to ask you, what does it mean to you to be such a big part in the company, you know, for so long? But I don't know. I think you might just disanswer that by saying your heart's with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a privilege, and you know I do consider it a privilege. I don't take it for granted. I have no doubt in my mind that if I started phoning it in and I wasn't up to standard, they would replace me, and they'd be absolutely right to do that. But that's why I love working with Cage Warriors. Everybody feels the same way, you know, from the matchmaker to the guy running it, to the guy doing the press, to the guys opening the cage door and doing the running jobs. Like, you know, we're all a team. We're all in it together. Like, you know, I used to turn up to the weigh-ins and help them pack the scales away. Like, you know, everyone mucks in, everyone gets into it, and we're all working towards the same goal. You know, I used to sit as a kid and watch wrestling and think, oh man, it'd be cool to do that one day. And I'm doing it now. So, you know, like I say, don't take it for granted. And, you know, I respect the institution. I respect the fighters. And I want to do them justice because, you know, at the end of the day, look, not everyone's going to get to the UFC. Not everyone's going to be the world champion. Only a very, very small number of people will. So these videos of their fights, this is their legacy. That's what they're going to show the kids and the grandkids. And I want them to have something good, like a good product, something that sounds professional, something that doesn't sound like, you know, it's a few lads in a sports hall just having a bit of a laugh.
Yeah. Before we go on to the next one, can I just ask, like, what the process of a commentator is? Because obviously, I'm assuming you got to do a lot of research. Can you just go into that a bit?
So I don't do a lot of research. I've got a weird memory for fights. I suppose with a lot of the guys in Cage Warriors, I've called a lot of their fights in the regional scene. So I've known them for a long time. I've seen a lot of the fights, called a lot of the fights, and I've obviously called all the fights in Cage Warriors. So I've kind of got all that in the head anyway. I have started doing a bit more research since Josh Palmer moved to America, because he used to do loads of stats and stuff. So I do bits of that now. And obviously it's kind of, you don't want to overload yourself. Mm. So for me personally, I don't want a giant sheet of A4 with hundreds of numbers on it in front of me, because I've got to watch the fight in the cage. I've got to look down at the monitor. I've got two guys sat next to me. I've got to make sure I'm not talking over them. I've got to look at them to see when they stop talking or when I can bring them in. I've got a producer in one ear and a director in the other ear. So I don't want to be sat staring at, hang on, is he 6-0 or 6-1? That kind of thing. Yeah. So I think the best thing to do, you're going to have some notes on your screen. You know, you're not going to remember everyone's exact record and how many they've got by submission in the first round. So it's good to have those certain things blocked out, color-coded, nice and big in front of you. You know, I've got John Gooden did a great video a couple of years ago on his note-taking process. So I've got a tablet with one of those like digital pens where you can just highlight something and it sends it straight to a notepad. We also have a stat pack, basically. The UFC do them, all big promotions do them. And they're sent to like everyone in production. So everyone kind of knows who's who and, you know, things that have to go on like the tail of the tape, et cetera. So everyone's reading from the same hymn sheet. So I often have that up in front of me as well. I might take a quick peek at it, but generally like with the main cards where we've got to do, you know, talking between fights and things like that, I sort of know what I'm going to say and what questions I'm going to ask beforehand. And, you know, really like the only sort of like in-depth research that I do is if it's someone that we've never had on Cage Warriors before, and I've not seen many of the fights, I'll get Fight Pass up or I'll go on YouTube and I'll just watch stuff. So just so I can learn how to fight, you know, if you learn how people fight, you know what to look for, you can tell people what to look for. You know, if you know that a guy always counters, you know, whatever, a left hook with a right low kick or something, you know, you can tell people to look out for it, then you sound dead smart. So, win-win.
So obviously Cage Warriors has got a well-known fantastic track record of sending fighters over to the UFC. I think it's over 120 now, is it, or not far off that?
Quite a few, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously one of the more recent ones and one of the bigger names is Paddy the Baddy. Had a great debut against Luigi Vendramini. What did you make of his performance, and how much does someone with that big of a draw already help Cage Warriors going forward?
I think, you know, if you look at like the biggest names that have gone from Cage Warriors to the UFC, you know, the likes of Dan Hardy and then, you know, the Conor McGregor era and not that sort of era of all those Irish guys going through. And Paddy's kind of like the next like really big name that's gone through. It's great for Cage Warriors because they're so visible. And, you know, especially someone like Paddy, who, you know, a lot of fighters are going to be like, well, I can beat that guy. It's like, oh, cool. So come to Cage Warriors, win the belt, go to the UFC and try and beat him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that must be, you know, if you're a fighter and you're out there seeing Paddy making all this money and getting all this attention, that must be great, because you know then that if you think you're better than that guy, there's no reason you can't do it too. So, you know, Cage Warriors obviously benefited hugely from having that, you know, roster of guys that have gone on. You know, it's great when you've got Dan Hardy at Cage side, multiple time Cage Warriors champion, fought for the UFC title against the best in the world. And he sat there saying, yeah, you know, this is where I started. This is what I did. If you can do what I did, you can do it too. So, you know, it's not just the fighters that benefit. Obviously, Cage Warriors benefits too. You know, the better guys like Paddy do and Connor and everyone else, you know, the better it makes Cage Warriors look, and the more appealing prospect it is for young guys to come in to. You know, I don't think it's no big secret that, you know, you've got like Bellator coming over and paying huge amounts of money, you know, that the European scene just can't compete with, which is fine. I'd never knock anyone for, you know, going and taking a big fat bag of cash, but like I said, if you want to get to the UFC, this is the way to do it.
Yeah. And for you then, with sort of that in mind, is Cage Warriors the best place to be in MMA outside of the UFC?
I think, you know, it all depends on the individual. You know, I think for a lot of people, you know, like, so say, for example, when Bellator like first sort of made that big commitment to Europe and started signing a lot of guys for really good money, I think a lot of people were in sort of places in their careers where they were like, well, you know, I might not be getting to the UFC now, or, you know, I might get to the UFC and kind of earn the same sort of money I'm earning now, and then, you know, maybe not have a massive run, and then I'm out of the UFC and Bellator aren't going to be interested. So I think, you know, if you're at a stage in your career where, you know, you just want to have big fights and get, you know, a few big purses behind you, get some money to invest and retire, then there's options out there. You know, Bellator's obviously one of them. You know, I know KSW pay good money over in Poland. And obviously, you know, if you can get in with like ONE FC or Brave, you know, there's plenty of different options depending on what you want to do. And that's always good. Options are great for fighters. You know, the last thing you want is, you know, just one place. You don't want a monopoly at any level, whether that's regional level or international level. So, you know, for me, yeah, I think Cage Warriors is the best place in Europe. And any young prospect who's got designs on making it to the top, I would absolutely say join Cage Warriors. At the same time, I understand why for some people it might not be the right decision. But, you know, look, there's plenty of fighters out there. There's plenty of fights out there, plenty of organizations out there. The scene's thriving. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think MMA, in terms of options right now, is probably in the best place it's been in ever, possibly.
Yeah, 100%. You know, both in terms of like, you know, the kind of Cage Warriors, KSW, ONE FC level. You know, there are guys obviously who, you know, many years ago they would have kind of dropped out of the UFC and, you know, maybe had to take ridiculous pay cuts or maybe even retire. But, you know, we're seeing guys now, they've had, you know, 10 fights in the UFC, they've got the option when their contract's coming up to say, well, actually, I'm going to see what Bellator are going to offer, or I'm going to see what the PFL are going to offer. You know, and I think especially at that level, that's where you really don't want them enough. You really want options there, because that means that the UFC have to start paying more, and Bellator have to start paying more, and PFL have to start paying more, and then everyone wins.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you probably touched on this in a couple of your answers already, but how proud are you of the legacy that Cage Warriors is creating right now?
Yeah, really proud. You know, it's So it's awesome for me to, like, you know, I don't, you know, everything's been a bit crazy these past couple of years. And there's nothing I love more than actually having a weekend where I've not got to go away anywhere and I can sit down, get a few cans on the go and watch the UFC. And then when I'm seeing like Molly McCann and Paddy and various other people whose fights I've commentated, you know, since they were amateurs in some cases, seeing them succeed, seeing them make money, seeing them like living the dream, it is awesome. And, you know, Cage Warriors has obviously been a big part of that for a lot of people. And I believe it will continue to be a big part of that for a lot of people going forward. You know, like I said earlier on, everyone at Cage Warriors, you know, is putting their heart into it. Everyone wants to see people succeed here, develop the skills necessary to get to that next level and then go on and take on the world. And, you know, I've been around other promotions in the past and, you know, they've had like talent poached by the UFC or whoever else. And there's been like a real atmosphere of bitterness about it. You know, oh, yeah, they're taking all our stars. You know, at Cage Warriors bench, we've been there like when we've been away on a fight week and there's been a UFC on the day before or something, or the you know, we've had it on in the bar afterwards and everyone's just gathering around watching the TV and cheering the Cage Warriors guys on. It's awesome. It's such a good atmosphere. And, you know, we're all super proud of Cage Warriors legacy.
Yeah. So moving forward then, Double Trouble's coming up 10th and 11th December. It may be, I don't know, but one positive for you is you get to have a night off. Is that a positive for you? I'm not too sure.
It's weird. Like when they announced they were going to do these trilogies, everyone was like, "Oh, this is sick! 3 shows in 3 days." And then like the second day in, you're like, "Oh man, like I got to bed." Like, especially because like they started doing the Saturday show really early, so like we're all obviously like we're in like a bubble, so we're in the arena until a coach comes to pick us up, and then like depending on where the hotel is, because bear in mind we had to get hotels that could close off an entire floor to us, so it's not like we could get a hotel 10 minutes down the road. We were like halfway across London, so you're in a coach back for like an hour, you're getting back to the hotel at like 12-1 o'clock, then you're having to get food, and then you're up and on the coach again at 11 o'clock in the morning. So it's really non-stop. And like just little things like not windows that don't open because it's, you know, you're on like the 10th floor or whatever. You just get a bit stir crazy. But you know, by the same note, it was good fun being in those bubbles with everyone. But yeah, it's going to be cool going back to, well, eventually going back to just doing one, because it does, it kind of grates on the old voice after a while. I think it's nice that they've gone from the trilogies to Double Trouble, so they're kind of like weaning us off sort of thing. It's like I'm calling this show like the methadone of Cage Warriors. Like, we're not going cold turkey, we're just taking it one step at
a time. So can you talk about some fights on those cards then that you're, you know, mostly excited for? You know, there's a lot that's been announced recently, so
yeah, I've got my little spreadsheet up. on my screen now, so I've got the ones that are in green on my spreadsheet, the ones I can come out. So yeah, looking at Friday's card, obviously Oban Elliott's back again. You know, he had a great comeback fight last time, scored a, you know, highlight reel knockout against a really good opponent, and he's taken a huge step up against Madis Laminas. You know, Madis 8-3, Oban's only 4-1. So you know that really speaks to the kind of guy Oban is. He wants to get in there with the toughest guys. You know, he's going to either win or he's going to go out on the shield against the best opponent he can find. And you know, Madis is really, really awkward. You know, his stand up is and his movement is so odd. He's good on the ground as well. So you know, I think with a win here, Oban's, you know, really putting himself, you know, up at the sort of top end of that Cage Warriors welterweight division. Mehdi Benlat there and George Hardwick. Like, the Hardwicks have kind of crashed onto the scene towards the end of the trilogy era. Both had a real trial by fire. You know, they've come in against high-level guys, former champions, both brothers. Harry's obviously not fighting on this trilogy, but I know he's heavily involved in George's preparations. Yeah. And, you know, Mehdi Benlat for me, You know, I know he's only 5-0-1, but high level guy. He's got a lot of boxing experience that people don't know about. And he says he tries very hard to keep all the videos off YouTube because he don't want people to see how good he is. So that should be sick. Obviously, Matt Bonner making the first defense of his title. You know, for me, the Matt Bonner thing was one of the best storylines of the entire trilogy. You know, you think before the trilogy series, he lost, I think, in 2020, he lost his first fight. And he was sat there with a record of 5-6-1. And you've got to be thinking at that stage, like, you know, what's next? Where do I go from here? Where do I fit in? You know, especially when, you know, Cage Warriors are always bringing guys in. And, you know, you've got a champion in the Tyus Frederick, I believe, at the time, who was, you know, just an absolute marauder. And, you know, he just turned everything around and went on this crazy run. You know, beating a legend like Matt Inman, beating a former champion, James Webb, and then taking the title off Natalius, who was looking untouchable in a wild fight. So, you know, Matt's again one of these guys, I was calling his fights amateur. Him and his twin brother once fought in consecutive fights amateur on FCC. It was so confusing. they both had the exact same haircut, the exact same beard, the exact same shorts. Yeah, it was really, I used to really annoy them, but I used to always suggest that like, they were switching each other out between rounds. I got to stop doing that. So, yeah. But that's the main card for Friday. And if you want a reason to get there early on the prelims, Jean Ndoye versus Tom Means, that should be sick. You know, Tom's a guy who's, you know, he struggled to find the wins on Cage Warriors, but he's recently picked up a win on the Cage Warriors Academy Southeast, and he's coming back to take on Jean, who's one of my favorite fighters over the past 10 years at Cage Warriors. So that main card wise on the Saturday, it's that rematch, right, between Luke Shanks and Sam Creasy. I'm sure you guys saw what happened in the first fight. There was sort of a bit of controversy over a tap, and the referee didn't see it, and the fight continued. Obviously, Sam, you know, ended up, you know, he's had two title fights before and lost both in the third round. He won one in the third round this time, so that was a great little story. But you know, he's obviously given Luke another chance. It's a big opportunity for Luke, because remember as well that Luke missed weight for their original fight. You know, usually when a guy misses weight and loses, he's not going to get an immediate rematch regardless. You know, and I think originally Cage Warriors were thinking, you know, maybe he moves up to bantamweight now, but obviously with that bit of controversy, we want these guys to have a fair shot at things. And Sam's been a great sportsman and allowed the rematch. So I'm expecting both of these guys to bring it. Don Wooding as well. I don't think his match has been released yet, but I know Cage Warriors are looking to get him on that Saturday card as well. So always good to see the Black Panther in there. Great value for money.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a stacked card both nights, and one not to be missed for certain. you mentioned, obviously, Matt Bonner. We've had him on a couple of times, and he's spoke himself very openly about how before he went to Next Gen, he was a very sort of up and down fighter, I think he put it. You know, he'd win one and then he'd lose a couple, or the other way around. And he never really had the stability he's got at Next Gen now. So yeah, it was real feel good story for him to eventually get to the belt and win it. Cause it was a really, really competitive fight from what I remember of it. I think Natalius controlled a lot of it and Matt just sort of took it and wore him down. It was a great fight. It was a great moment. And yeah, it'd be great to see him in there again. How do you expect him to get on? He's obviously got a tough opponent.
Yeah, so his opponent is really good. He was a prospect and saying a lot of good things about him. Look, the issue that he's had is he has fought very, very little. Obviously, it was very difficult to get MMA fights in France. I know he had some issues with injuries and obviously the whole lockdown thing as well. You know, he's fought a handful of times in like the last 5 years. One thing I was going to think is really going to play heavily into Matt's favor here is how active he's been over this trilogy series. The series of opponents that he's gone into face, And the fact that now as well, he won the title and he's had a few months off to kind of get out of that constant cycle of fight camp, fight camp, fight camp. So I think we're going to be seeing the absolute best Matt Bonner that we've seen so far when he defends his title for the first time. And I think, you know, you're going to look for Matt to want to drag it into deep waters again. You know, he's never been finished, amateur or professional, I believe. And he's had a lot of fights across both disciplines. So to get Matt out of there is a tough thing. And I think, you know, we saw in the Tyus fight, as the fight wore on, the Tyus was just getting a little bit more frustrated that he couldn't put Matt away. Because normally, like, when the Tyus hits you, that's, you know, you stay hit, right?
Yeah, lights out.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing serious damage. If he's not putting you out, he's hurting you. And I think he was kind of getting frustrated that he wasn't able to do that to Matt. And then obviously, you know, you get frustrated, you get desperate, you start making moves and making mistakes that you wouldn't normally make. And that's when Matt was able to capitalize. So, you know, I would think for a guy who's not been fighting as regularly as his opponent, that guy's going to want to come in and try and finish Matt as quickly as possible. And I think if he can't do that early, he's going to be in for a long night.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, I was at Hardwick and Ben McDaugh fighting for the vacant title. Do we know what happened to McColgan?
Yeah, so sorry, I'm just pouring myself some water. I've had a really bad cold all week, so my voice is in bits. So Joe has had a lot of family stuff going on and personal stuff. I know I think he got a new house last year and he's had a lot of stuff to do with the house and a lot of stuff at work. And basically, he's just not been able to train to the level that he wants. You know, he's helping his teammates prepare for fights, and that's really all he's got time to do. I spoke to him a few days ago. So just to pick up from where we left off there, Joe did want to originally vacate the title before the last trilogy, but Cage Warriors had sort of said, look, you know, just hang in there, see if anything changes with your training situation. Unfortunately, it didn't. So, you know, Joe's looking to come back April or May next year. And when he does, he's going to be immediately first in line for a title shot. You know, I think that's cool, you know, because a lot of people would have maybe said, oh, I'll do an interim title, but Joe wanted the division to move on. So, you know, it gives Mehdi or George the chance to be crowned Cage Warriors World Champion. And they get the unenviable prospect of fighting Joe McColgan when they come back.
It's nice that he's done that and allowed the division to carry on. You know, it's a good move.
Yeah, it's refreshing to see if they can get something we've mentioned on here a few times, that we're not huge fans of interim titles. We'd rather fights just be for a number one contender or be for the main belt. There's no reason really to introduce an interim belt. So it's nice to see that he's doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Joe's a good guy. You know, he's a real fighter. So it didn't surprise me at all when I heard that. And look, that fight with Mehdi was one of the best Cage Warriors fights of all time. So brilliant. Or if, you know, if it's George who's going to go to Ireland and fight Joe, then, you know, that's great as well. Either one of those is going to be a great fight.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Definitely. So moving on, is there any fighters you can name that people should keep their eyes on who you think will eventually be making that move to the UFC?
I think two of the most it's probably me taking a bit of the Glack brothers. I know the UFC have got both of them on the radar already. I think, you know, you're potentially looking at both of them being in a position to fight for a Cage Warriors title by the end of next year. And I think they've both got the talent, you know. They're 6-0 and 6-1 respectively. And you know, Matt's only lost is to Ian Garry, and you know, that there's certainly no shame in that. So I'd definitely keep an eye on those. I'd keep an eye on Hardwicks. I think Gerardo Fani as well in the flyweight or bantamweight division, whatever he decides to settle on. You know, he's come back really well from that loss to Jack Cartwright, and he's been stopping people. So I think he's definitely one to keep an eye on as well. Will Curry, Christian Leroy Duncan. And look, there's a whole host of guys coming through now who are just in the kind of first couple of Cage Warriors fights. Guys like Scott Pedersen, guys like Manny Akpan, guys like Liam Malloy. You know, I'm just kind of thinking of guys we've had on the last couple of trilogies who've really impressed. Scott Pedersen, another guy with a big amateur background who's looked really good in his first few fights. This is, you know, look, obviously I'm a company guy, but this is what I love about Cage Warriors is, you know, you get to see the real high level stuff at the top of the card. But if you watch the first couple of prelims, 2-3 years down the line, they're going to be the guys who are in the main events. So, you know, there's good stuff from top to bottom.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
So last couple of questions now. So I'm going to have a little bit of fun with these ones. So if you could bring any fighter in the world into the Cage Warriors Octagon, who would it be and why?
Oh, man, that's tough. That's a really tough question. I probably wasn't expecting that, and you kind of caught me off guard here. I'm a fan of like really so like I probably have like I am a fan of like the old freak show things. You know, he's fought in Cage Warriors a couple of times. I believe he's still with Bellator at the moment. I think him versus Mehdi Benlakdar at lightweight will be an absolutely sick fight. Obviously, Mehdi's got that crazy boxing background. Tim's got a really high level like kickboxing, taekwondo background. So I think they'd make for a great fight. So if I could like go and sign anyone from Europe, for me personally, it'd probably be Tim to fight Mehdi or George, whoever wins the lightweight title.
Last one then. So this is sort of open-ended one. I guess it's how you may interpret best. But so with this one, you can't say McGregor. But in your opinion, who's the best fighter to come from Cage Warriors? Not you may still be even in the organization, but for you, who's the best?
Man, there's been so many good ones over the years. You know, I think Dan Hardy has to be in that conversation. What he did prior to getting to the UFC, you know, fighting in Europe and all around the world was phenomenal. And to go 5 rounds with the greatest of all time, not get finished, despite being put in some absolutely disgusting positions, you know, that says a lot. You know, Dan's a real fighter's fighter. And I think in terms of, you know, pure talent and ability, he's got to be up there in that conversation. I think Ian Garry is probably one of the most exciting prospects I've ever seen. So, you know, from someone from kind of like this generation of guys, you know, he had a bit of a rude awakening in that UFC debut. But when you just look at the raw ability that someone's got compared to other guys of the same age and the same stage of their careers, he's clearly something special. So I think, you know, who's to say, because you see so many guys and you think they're going to smash it and they don't, or you see guys who think, oh, maybe they're not going to do so well. And then they end up having really, really long careers. So who's to say, but I think, you know, if you look, talking in terms of like raw potential, Ian Garry is just, you know, he's got it coming out of both ears, man. The guy's incredible.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that I did want to ask off that, what you just said in regards to Hardy, obviously now you get to sit beside him, and his analytical mind is something else. Like, how is that, having him on the desk and adding his takes and that?
Sorry, I didn't catch that, man.
Did you catch that? No, so I was saying, obviously, now you have Dan Hardy sitting with you on the desk, and his analytical mind is something else when it comes to MMA. How is that, having him on the desk with you and listening to his takes and stuff?
It's great. You know, like we all meet up in the hotel before the event and we talk, and then we all sit on the bus and we talk, and then I get to talk to him all night as well. Mark Goddard, you know, the other kind of people around Cage Warriors, the conversation is always top quality. Working with a guy like Dan makes my job so much easier because I can just kind of ask him questions and let him go. And the guy's an absolute encyclopedia. And, you know, again, it's one of the reasons why I love Cage Warriors. Like everyone there is there for a reason. They're there because they're very, very, very good at what they do. So listening to the likes of Dan Strauss break down grappling and Dan doing like the striking and MMA side of things. What's really cool is like watching Dan Hardy geek out at Dan Strauss breaking down grappling. And, you know, the respect that those guys have for like the different areas of expertise that they bring to it, you know. I think we worked together really well as a team. We gelled really quickly as a team, and it's just a privilege to you know work alongside guys like that who are just experts in their field, and you know it brings out the best in me as well.
Definitely, you all do an incredible job. I mean, as you say, everyone has a part to play, and Cage Warriors is amazing because of it. So each member of the team, it's brilliant.
Absolutely. Well, Brad, look, it's been absolutely brilliant talking to you today. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Best of luck for yourself. Hope the upcoming Double Trouble goes well for you and all the Cage Warriors. And again, just thanks very much and wish you all the best.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. We'll have to do it again sometime when they're having us on. And enjoy the fights.
Pleasure.
Take care, mate.
Thank you.
This is the greatest. I love it.
It was super necessary.
And delicious.